This is the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. This is one of the Geets. This is called Pranaya Geet. This comes right in the beginning of the Rasa Dance, chapter 29 of the 10th canto. And where Krishna plays his flute, he comes to Vamshivadi, plays his flute. He calls all the gopis there individually. And then when they get there, he says, "Oh, Swagatam. How can I help you? What do you want? How can I please you? Have you come to see the forest? Why have you come here? Please tell me. Actually, I think your relatives are worried about you. It's dark, it's late at night, and it's not so good to be alone with another man in a setting like this. I think you should go home. And if you came to see the beauty of the forest, well, you must have seen it by now. And you have to consider that this time of night there's many bears and tigers and jackals prowling around looking for their prey. So I don't think it's a very good, safe place to be. And now, what about Dharma? You're all Dharma Patnis, properly married. You should go home because I have to say something to you about Dharma. Patni Dharma." So then Krishna explained to them about Patni Dharma. Serve your husband is the highest religious principle. And if you deviate from that and engage in illicit life, then you won't get anything in this world or the next world. And besides, if your whole objective of coming here is to increase your attachment for me or increase your love for me, and that's not necessary either. You don't have to be in front of me or be with me to increase your attachment or love for me. You can stay home and engage in Shravanam Kirtanam and Archanam, like every other Grihastha does. Why you want to be right here looking at me and speaking with me? Just be happy with my deity form. And you get the same result from this Shravanam, Kirtanam, Archanam, and Smaranam, Dhyanam, that you get from standing in front of me. So there's no need for you to be here. The gopis are wondering, what is he saying? They could not understand why Krishna was using such rough words. They were very doubtful about Krishna's hidden affection in his unspoken words, due to the feelings of humility which arose from the gopis' sthayi bhav. The gopis became morose and lost in thought. What is this? What's going on? That person for whom we have neglected everything, our husbands, parents, families, our religious duties, our gravity, our fear, our shame, he's now neglecting us because we are not good enough for him. Seeing their aspirations smashed to pieces, the gopis became very anxious, thinking, should we make a show of humbly holding Krishna's feet and crying piteously, begging to remain here with him in the forest of Vrindavan? Or should we try our best to remain sober, cool-headed, and pretend, feigning aloofness, we should pretend to be aloof and then return to Braj and somehow force our minds to remain grave? Or perhaps we should just give up our lives, either in Krishna's presence or by secretly drowning in the Yamuna or by some other means. But if we end our lives, how will we be able to see Krishna's sweet face again? Then again, how will we be able, as he has ordered us, to eat the vomit of service to our husbands and other relatives? How can we maintain ourselves where we will go? How can we maintain ourselves? Where will we go and what will we do? Because Krishna said the proper duty of a Dharma Patni, proper duty of a chaste wife is to serve her husband, even if he's invalid or ugly or not very healthy. The highest dharma is to serve her husband, stay chaste and connected to her husband. And so the gopis were saying, what is this? We've already left. We threw out that thing. Now he wants us to eat what we threw out. So the Vishnu is saying that he's ordered us to eat the vomit of service to our husbands and other relatives. The Vraja Gopis are considering serving their so-called husbands or serving their mother-in-laws to be like eating what you've already thrown up, eating your own vomit, vantasi, that which you've given up, you take up again. So they said, what is this? So since we can't really do what he's saying, then we can't maintain ourselves. We can't go home. We can't stay here. What will we do? The gopis were like chatiki birds upon whom Krishna poured the poison of his flute vibration. Chatiki birds are supposed to drink water from a rain cloud in the monsoon season, fresh water. Before it even reaches the ground, they catch it in midair, and they thrive in that pure sky water, sky rainwater, chatikis. So now they're living by that, and they're sustained by that, and they're happy and joyful to play in that, those monsoon clouds, and catch those drops of nectar water for their sustenance. But now the analogy is, yes, chatiki birds have again appeared. The gopis are the chatiki birds, and their mouths are open with eagerness. Their mouths, their hearts are trembling in eagerness. Their minds are anxious for the monsoon cloud to pour forth the rains. The monsoon cloud is Ganashama Radhe Radhe, Ganashama Radhe Radhe. But he's not saying Nikunja Mevi Raja. He's saying Garjaga. He's not saying come into the Nikunj. Nikunja me viraje. Come into the viraje. Come into the kunj. He's saying go jao. Osaki on jao. Bavas. Jainge. Go back home. But they're the chatiki birds and their mouths are open. They want the nectar from that blue cloud, that monsoon cloud, that Krishna meg. The nectar of his lips, which the flute kisses, the flute embraces Krishna's lips and emanates so many nectarine sweet sounds. But now, that Ganasham, that rain cloud, is not emitting or showering ambrosial, life-sustaining, nourishing raindrops, sky water, but he's pouring poison with his flute vibration. Because that flute vibration, he's not playing it now, he played it to call us here. He called us here, and now he's sending us back. So his calling us here with his flute is actually poisoning us. Poison kills you. So his flute called us here, now he's killing us with his words. What is this? They became becoming overwhelmed. The gopis trusted Krishna and willingly drank that poison without hesitation. Did Krishna suddenly give up his habit? Give up his normal quality of being easily approachable. So the gopis are feeling very unhappy at Krishna's seeming rejection of their presence or their response to his invitation. He gave the nirmantran, rasa nirmantran, rasa vilas nirmantran, invitation for rasa vilas, rasa krita. Then he got there, he said, oh, you came. Why you came? You came here for some reason. Look, man, this is the Nirmantran. This is the venue. It says right here, Rasastali, banks of the Yamuna, and sells the date here, Sharad Purnima. I've got the thing. I've got the venue in my hand. It says Sharad Purnima. I'm here. This is today. It says at 12 o'clock at night. It's 12 o'clock at night. It says, like in anything they say, near the big this and that. So it says across from the big, near the Vamshiva tree, across from the Yamuna or whatever. So we're here, everything according to the invitation, your mantra, and then you're driving us away. Say, no, there's no party here, there's no venue here. Well, this is the right address. This is the right place. How is it possible? Always some mistake. So they hang their heads down, they start breathing very deeply and sorrowfully, and their lips become dried out from the hot breath they're exhaling. They're scratching the ground with their toes, which is an expression of rejection and sadness. Tears are falling down their faces and catching the kajal mascara surrounding their blue eyes. And it's dripping down onto the breasts and washing away the red powder that's sprinkled there to incite Krishna's desire. So they experience great anxiety. And their heads were lowered. When one lowers the head, he feels somewhat shameful. It indicates the gopi's shame. They were feeling, listen, O Sakis, we gave up our natural shyness at the invitation of prema. But now again, shyness has returned. Prema made us cast away our shyness, and such prema is praiseworthy. Prema is defined as that which controls the object of one's love. If Krishna, the object of our love, has not been conquered by our love, then our love must not be genuine. If that is a fact, then what is the purpose of our abandoning all our shyness? So this way the Vrajagopis were feeling remorse and embarrassment, which was expressed in their faces. Their reddish lips were drying up because of the hot breathing that arose from their lamentation. When the hot sun dries ripe bimba fruits, dark spots appear on them and they grow soft. The beautiful lips of the gopis similarly change in appearance. The sign of their shame is indicated by their scratching on the earth with their left big toes. Left big toes, from let's say left big toe. There's them there. The gopi said, "Oh, Mother Earth, please open up so we can enter in you." So they're scratching on the earth, it's like knocking on the door. Come to someone's flat and knock on the door and say, "What do you want? Let me in. I want to come in. Acha, I want to see you. All right, come in." So they're scratching on the earth. "Oh, Mother Earth, open up. We want to come in. We want to get away from here. We're so embarrassed. He's made us so embarrassed. And we're so much anxious. Let us just somehow suddenly disappear from here." The gopis' sorrow and remorse are further described. The gopis' tears mixed with their kajal and fell in two parallel lines to smear the kunkum on their breasts. It was as if the increasing torment of separation, like a saw, was cutting the gopis in two with those black lines. So there's one, this eye, the tears are coming down. On this side, the tears are coming down, mixing with the black mascara kajal, then coming down, then dripping onto their breasts. And two lines, so it looks like these two lines are cutting their bodies in half. What was that feeling like? We're getting cut in half. Their torment of their separation from Krishna was like a saw. The torment, the separation was like a saw. Excessive tears were flowing. It can be surmised, though it has not been stated, that all these tears did not soak their inner garments. That means they're whatever, Nivibandha and Choli, whatever. This is because the rivers of tears in their eyes and the fire of remorse raging in their hearts started a war opposing the functions of wetting and drying up. Overcome with great sadness, the gopis stood silently. Because they could not bear the burden of sorrow, they began to lose consciousness. It's pralaya. Thus they stood still like lifeless puppets, stamba. It's ashtasattvic vikara. All eight. Tears and trembling, everything at once highly inflamed, sudipta. Remorse, the fire of remorse was raging in their hearts. The fire, the tears are wet and they're falling onto their breasts and then running off their breasts mixed with the kunkum and the kajal. But the tears are not wetting their cholis. The the cholis aren't getting wet by all this river of tears, because the cholis are holding the raging fire of their remorse. They're feeling very remorseful and feeling rejected and embarrassed and dissatisfied and unfulfilled. So the heat of all those feelings together is so much burning and drying, hot and dry heat, that their cholis can't even get wet. Now this is a war going on between the raging fire of remorse and the water of their tears. So the fire is sufficient enough to prevent the undergarments from getting wet by all these tears. It's quite a clash here. So Krishna was their beloved, and but he was speaking very unfavorably to them. But they remained attached to him. They stopped their crying and they wiped their eyes and they began to speak, their voices stammering with agitation. Interesting. Oh, gopis, what is the use of crying in the forest? Why don't you just put a smile on your faces and return home? Krishna tells. As if Krishna was shouting this phrase in their ears, the gopis woke up from their dazed state and began to plead with Krishna in these verses. So this next series of verses is verse 31 to 41, is called the Pranaya Gita. The gopis address in this particular verse is Preshtam Priyataram. Preshtam Priyataram Iva Pratibha Shamanam Krishnam Tararta Vinivartita Sarvakama Netre Vimrijya Riti To fahate smakinchit sam ramba gangara giro bruvat anurakta. The gopis here, they address Krishna as Preshtam, which means beloved, Preshtam, on account of their previously having frequent physical contact with him. Yet still, without any reason, Krishna was now speaking as if just the opposite of a beloved, harshly saying such unfavorable things as, you should go, you should just go home and serve your husbands. This would be impossible, because for Krishna's sake, the gopis had put aside all objects of material pleasure in such a thorough way that they could never again have any relation with them. The gopis did not have even a trace of material lust or desire. Their desire to please Krishna was not based on selfish material desire. The statement that the gopis rubbed their eyes, which had been blinded with tears, implies that they were thinking, now our end has come. Let us take a good look at Krishna's lotus feet before we die. The gopis were agitated, thinking, alas, alas, even though we were supposedly dear to Krishna and have not committed any offense, how could he bring us to the stage of death by his neglecting us? If it is imagined that the gopis were not upset, but rather they thought, because we have no suitable beauty or qualities, we are not fit to associate physically with Krishna. Let us simply give him up. Sukadev states to the contrary, that their voices were stammering with agitation. It may be said that in either case, we deduce that the gopis lacked pure love of Godhead and thus should have desisted. This objection is refuted by the word anurakta, which implies that those who are blinded by ecstatic attraction, anurag, cannot tolerate logical arguments. That's a very nice point. So the gopis' actual position is they're blinded by ecstatic attraction, and they cannot tolerate logical arguments. So this is a law, apparently. Vishnu is saying that someone is totally in love with someone and totally blinded by their ecstatic attraction for the beloved, They can't tolerate any logical arguments. Someone might say, listen, this is not logical. You know, he's a Shudra and you're a Brahmin, and he's Muslim and you're, you know, a Hindu Brahmin. It's not logical. How you can ever get married? I don't know. Don't tell me about that. I love him. He's my everything. It's like this. Love is blind. The gopis were totally saturated with intense love for Krishna and were thus beyond any mundane considerations. Now these verses, as we mentioned, this is called Pranaya Gita. There are six Gitas in the 10th canto. And this Pranaya is a love song. Pranaya Gita means love song. And in love, the prema is love, and prema has some divisions. Different divisions. Ujjwala Nilamani is describing what is this pranaya. There's prema, which comes in a spiritual body, Vastu City. We take birth in Goloka Vrindavan, rather Boma Vrindavan. Then we have the passport of prema, but we don't have any visa. We have the passport of prema, so we can travel into the land of prema. But if we want to actually enter the different domain, we have the facility to travel overseas, or let's say, into the land of prema, prema-filled leelas of Radha and Krishna, prema-krita, prema-rasa leelas. But without a visa, then we can't gain any, you know, actual entrance. So passport is not enough. You may have an Indian passport, but you can't go to America unless you get a visa. So you have prema, and you take birth there, and Siddhadeya, which is basically Vastu City in the making. And then you have to get the qualification of developing these different forms of prema at that level. And then, of course, you need a guru. Krishna came to this world to understand Radharani's love, and he needed a guru. He had several gurus. Surav Damodar Goswami was Lita Sakhi, and Rai Ramananda, Vishaka Sakhi, Gadadhara Pandit, and Radharani. So these gurus were teaching him all the different aspects of love, especially Mahabhava Radharani. So when the jiva gets perfection and prema and he goes there, then he has to get trained. And what is this sneha? What is this man? What is this pranaya? What is this rag and anurag and bhav and mahabhav? So he's trained in the theory of it all. And then the practice, and he's introduced in different pastimes, and then he can serve and assist Radharani when she's experiencing these different moods of love. These are different moods and expressions of love. So this pranaya is called sneha man pranaya. This is the third stage of prema. It's Ujjwala Nilamani says that this is an intensified state of Krishna prema, which goes all the way to Mahabhav. I mean, prema goes that high. When man, which is when one is exhibiting a sulky mood towards Krishna, unfavorable, contrary mood, sometimes generated with a cause or arising without any cause, or one wants to play hard to get, or one wants to play unconcerned, or to be loved just to increase their attachment or increase their infatuation. One will pretend to be not or disinterested. So this is man. We hear manini radha, sulking mood, contrary mood, pouting. Now, when this man assumes a feature of unrestrained intimacy, this is called pranaya. Pranaya means that, like we say prana, this word prana is there, prana. So prana means that, as it says here, it's you are me and I am you. You know, the light of your existence, the essence of your existence is me. And I am the essence of your existence. You are my pran, and I am your pran. Praneshri Radha and Prananath Sham. Priya Priyatam, as they say in Nimbark. Priya Priya Radha and Priyatam Shyam. So we say Prana Priyatam and Prana Priyaji or Prana Praneshwari. She's the, Radharani is the Lord of the Prana of Krishna. So the confidence means that at this stage of pranaya, one considers one's own life, mind, intelligence, body, possessions to be one in all respects with the life, mind, intelligence, and body of the beloved. So this is pranaya. So in this love song, Pranaya Geet, verse 31 through 41 of the 10th canto, chapter 29, it's called Pranaya Gita because in this song of pranaya, Pranayagita, or song of love, intense love, the gopis reveal how, Krishna, how can you drive us away? How can you send us away back to our homes? Because we are you and you are we. We can't move from here. That's text 31. Sri Gopi Uchu. Me vam viborhati bhavan karitam nisam sam santyajya sarva vishayams tava pada mulam bhakta bhajaswa duravagrahama tyajasman devo yatari purusho bhajate mumukshun. The Braja Gopis said, the cowherd douses a braj, oh, all-powerful one, Vibho, you should not speak to us in such a cruel way. Do not reject us, who have renounced all material enjoyment to serve your lotus feet. Reciprocate with us, O stubborn one, just as the primeval Lord Narayan reciprocates with his devotees and their endeavors for liberation. Vishwanath explains the intention of the gopis, what they were thinking and intending and feeling before they send us. Krishna is instructing us in Dharma, Patni Dharma, religious principles, while he himself is indulging in all kinds of sinful activity. That's why they spoke this verse. So what is this? You know, you stubborn one, you're so cruel. You should not speak such cruel words because you are the son of Nanda Maharaj, who is famous everywhere for his religiousness. In other words, cruelty is an irreligious expression. To be cruel, jiva himsa, to be violent or cruel to another person is considered a sin to any living entity. There's a lot of cruelty in this world in Kali Yuga because of the intense tamagun. People lose all their sensitivity for others and all their respect for other life forms, so they become very cruel. So he's saying, you know, gopis are saying here, what is this? You're driving us away. You're so cruel. So this is not religious. You're Nanda Nandan. The father's a famous Dharmic king. And you're so the son of a Dharmic father. And you're acting so, and you're telling us to be religious, Dharma, Patni Dharma, but then you yourself you're acting sinfully by being cruel. Rather, the gopis are implying in their words, only someone who has a reputation among everyone as a murderer might properly speak like you're speaking. Rishamsham. The gopis continue, though we are numbering in the millions, you have fired your arrow-like words upon all of us so that we will now give up our bodies and go to the abode of Yamaraj, rather than the coward village you have advised us return to. You told us just go back home and serve your husbands, and you must have babies by now. Of course, it's the babies of their sisters, not their own. But so this is another way of telling us to go to Yamaraj, because we won't go home. We'll give up our bodies right in front of you. On the other hand, you can go back to Braj, taking with you the sinful reactions for murdering millions of women. So we'll die here on the spot and maybe go to Yamaraj for not following our Dharma, Patni Dharma. But you will be responsible for our death. So when we'll go to Yamalok and you'll go to Brajalok, but you'll be carrying the sinful reactions on your head for murdering millions of gopis who are gathered here for the Maharashtras, simply to please you. If you don't want to be implicated in the sinful reaction of killing women, then you should reciprocate with us, who have given up everything to serve your lotus feet. But, Krishna may ask the gopis, my dear desirous ladies, have you come here to worship me because your husbands have not satisfied your lust? Prajagopis, O Duravagraha, stubborn one. So the Panini says the word, says, Avagraho Brishti Pratibandha. The proper use of the word Avagraha is to mean the stopping of rain. Thus the gopis are calling Krishna, O Duravagraha, can only be explained as metaphorically comparing Krishna to something else, namely a rain cloud, which is faulty for not providing rain. So it's... because it means stubborn one. So rain cloud is supposed to drop shower rain, but if it's not acting like that, then it's being very stubborn and non-cooperative with the human beings by not releasing its rain shower. So Krishna is saying, you're a Duravagra, you're a stubborn one, you're like a cloud that's refusing to rain. You're blue like a cloud, but you're just thus we get the meaning, O cloud that rains only poison, even though you are far away, you, the Krishna cloud, are the friend of us Chatiki birds. But today you happen to be raining poison. If because of drought, avagraha means drought, you're not giving rain, then go ahead and don't give rain. We shall instead drink the poison you rain down and die, but we will not drink the water of the lakes or any other reservoir, even though they are close by. Indeed, you know this is our nature. Consequently, please do not reject us if you have any sense of gratitude at all. Krishna replies, gopis, the Chatiki birds, depend on the cloud, as you have said, but the cloud does not depend on the Chatiki. For the cloud, it does not matter whether the Chatiki birds live or die. So, Krishna is really being cruel. They're saying that we're Chatiki birds, and we've come here to get some rain, and you're giving us poison. And Krishna says, all right, that's your position, Chatikis. You depend on the cloud, but the cloud doesn't. In other words, you depend on me, but I don't depend on you. The cloud will live with the Chatiki or without the Chatiki. The cloud will live, but whether it doesn't really care. Prajagopis, all right, but you're not a lifeless cloud. You know, it's an analogy. He would say, okay, you can use this analogy. Then okay. He said, no, but analogy is not perfect. You're not a lifeless cloud. Rather, you are the most exalted of chivalrous persons, like Narayan himself, because they indicate that word by saying Narayan. So because you're similar to Narayan, then you should act like Narayan. Because Narayan reciprocates with those who have given up everything and gives by awarding liberation to his devotees. Because Narayan is under the control of his devotees. But you do not reciprocate with us who have renounced all kinds of sense gratification for your sake. So they're saying, listen, other people, they give up everything and worship Narayan and he gives them liberation. So you're also supposed to be an amsha or something like Narayan. And why don't you act accordingly, like him? We've also given up everything. And now you want to drive us to Patal Loka or drive us to hell or back home. yat patya patya sridam manavritta ranga srinam sadharmeti dharma vidha tvayoktam astvevam astvevam etad upadesha pade tvayishye preshto bhavams tanubritam kila bandaratma. Our dear Krishna, you are indeed an expert in religious matters, and you have advised us that the proper religious duty for women is to faithfully serve their husbands, children, and other relatives. We agree that this principle is valid. However, actually, this service should be rendered to you. After all, you are the dearmost friend of all embodied souls, and you are their most intimate relative, and indeed the very self. So Krishna's arguing that you should go home and serve your husbands. This is religious. And their other relatives, and then they're saying that there's no relative that's more intimate to us than you. You're more intimate than our husbands, more intimate than our mothers, fathers, and everyone. So this verse is spoken by some of the more guileless gopis hoping to defeat Krishna with his own statements. Guileless means very clever. Vrishagopi said, you have said that a woman's duty is to serve her husband and other relatives. This remains valid as far as it applies, and we have no argument against this. We have been doing that all the time. And Krishna says, really? And how is that? Vrishagopis, we are always engaged in serving you, the originator of instructions on Dharma meant for us. This is according to the reasoning that first one should serve the Acharya who teaches Dharma, and then one should execute the instructions given. The scriptures state that only by following the Acharya without duplicity can one's religious duties be successfully prosecuted. Furthermore, if the Acharya is the Supreme Lord himself, how much more we should follow? On account of your being the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you're also the soul of all embodied beings. On account of your being the Supreme Soul, you're almost also the dearmost, and because of being the dearmost, you are one's true relative. So the gopis haven't pinned on this point. In other words, the scriptures say that the wife should serve the Paramatma, who resides within one's husband and others. When the Paramatma leaves, the body is taken out of the house and burned on the riverbank. Therefore, by following you, who are the personal manifestation of the Paramatma, the following of one's husband and other relatives is automatically accomplished. So why should we worship the Paramatma in our husband's heart? You are the Paramatma, right in front of us. Why go indirectly, around about, circuitous way? What need do we have of other husbands and relatives who are devoid of their souls because they stand in opposition to our following you, and who have thus already had their faces burned in the funeral pyre? They're saying, what's the point of serving our husbands? They're opposed to you and opposed to our serving you, the original or the actual Paramatma. So they're already burned up. We don't have any connection with them. Their face is already burned up in the funeral pyre, which is a way of saying, we don't think about them anymore. We forgot about them. If someone says, your face is, as far as I'm concerned, your face is burned up in a funeral fire. That's a way of saying, you ain't got no face. You lost your face. And I have this term, I lost my face. So you lose your face and every other trace at that time because they burn you to ashes from form to formless. The preliminary manifestations of pure love of God, Purva Prem, cover a devotee's awareness of Krishna's Godhood. Therefore, one may question, since the gopis were certainly experiencing such purva prema, how is it that they thought of Krishna as God, the Paramatma? The characteristics of prema mentioned in Narada Pancharatra and Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Prema constantly manifests natural symptoms, both hot and cold, which reflect the devotee's simultaneous experience of both union and separation from the Lord. Prema that is due to waves of bliss brings about tears, shivering, and other symptoms in the body. The bliss tasted in bhakti is infinitely greater than the bliss of Brahman. The pain experienced by the premi bhakta during separation from Krishna burns with more brilliance than millions of sun rays. This all-illuminating sun of separation reveals all of Krishna's beautiful transcendental qualities, including those related to Krishna's opulence, Aishwarya Gun, as well as those related to his sweetness, Madhurya Gun. Thus, the experience of devotion and separation does not cover any of Krishna's qualities. So when one is having sambhog, or meeting intimately or directly with Krishna, enjoying with him, and Jal Keli, or Julan, Pan Bihar, Rati Keli, Arasa, Marupan, Pasha Kela, Vamsi Chori Leela, Holi, so many wonderful pastimes with sambhog. At that time, the sweetness, the Madhurya Prema is so intense and so encompassing that one is just, he's worshipping the sweetness, he's relishing the sweetness. It's Madhurya Purushottam and Madhurya Leela. So the Madhurya Leelas of Sambhog Leela are so sweet and so intimate and so intense that you there's no idea that Krishna's God or Narayan or Paramatma or anything. It's just everything is forgotten. It's Prem Vi Brahm. And there's only sweetness there. Madhuram, Madhuram, Madhuram. Smita, Madhuram. Varanam, 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 Madhuram, Smita, Madhuram. Varanam, Madhuram, Smita, Madhura. Your face is sweet and your smile is too. Varanam. So at that point, it's just sweet, sweet, sweet. Madhurari pater akilam madhuram. Everything is sweet about the Lord of Sweetness in the time of union, sambhog, Madhurya Vrindavan. However, when those moments of separation come, viraha, and then that separation from the beloved somewhat dilutes the sweetness and allows some appearance of Aishwarya Gun. So that's why it said, in separation, these kind of thoughts or conceptions or viewpoints arise in the gopis' minds. O Krishna, we heard from Bhagavari Rishi, you've always been nasty to women. You've always been very nasty to women. In this life, you know, one woman came to you, and when you were only 6 days old, and you killed her. She came to you like a mother, a beautiful mother, offering her breasts full of milk. You killed her. And then you would steal the yogurt from the gopis when you grew up in Gokul and break their pots and run around the house. And because you're always giving so much distress to women. And you stole the clothes of the innocent gopis. So your whole business, whenever you appear, is to cause distress to women. And look at what happened to Shapurnaka. She approached you for vilas and you chopped her nose and ears off. And look how much suffering you put Sita through, you know, because of your, you know, your vanvas and so much difficulty and suffering. So look at this, and it's Kuja. You went in to Mathura and you spent a couple of days and left her crying and sad. Never came back again. So you're cruel. Your cruelty to women is proven over many. So all these type of thoughts come out in separation. That's what Vishnu is saying there, that The illuminating sun of separation reveals all of Krishna's beautiful transcendental qualities, the Aishwarya Guna, and so that's why they're able to say you're Paramatma, this, that. Devotion and union, sambhog, and other, on the other hand, is more pleasure-giving than millions of nectar-filled moonbeams, and reveals not only the qualities of Krishna, which manifests as tasty sweetness, since direct association with Krishna is like nectar rays of the moon, that intoxicating nectar covers Krishna's opulence. Beautiful analogy. Huh? There's a description here of the Madhurya Krishna, Aishwarya Krishna, Achintyam Veda Veda Tattva, that Krishna is inconceivably simultaneously one and different. He's inconceivably simultaneously one with me in sambhog union, and simultaneously separated from me in viraha. So union and separation, separation and union. When I'm in union with Krishna, I feel, he's not here. There's some other gopi I'm seeing. Actually, it's Brahm, it's Prem Brahm. It's a bewilderment of Prem. Feel separation and union. It's called Prem Vaichitya. You're with the beloved, and a wave of separation flows over your mind and heart. He's gone. Madhusudana is gone. Some other lover is here. That's separation union. Then when one is separated from Krishna, sometimes he has swapna vilas. Krishna comes in the dream, and they have enjoying the dream and swapna vilas. Or they feel so much separation that brings Krishna's appearance. He comes there. So union and separation. There's one song that they sing in Rasalila that says when Radharani is with Krishna, she sees one Krishna. And when she's separated from Krishna, she sees Krishna everywhere. And that's told in Gita, 6th chapter, verse 30. Yo mam pashati sarvatra, ram chamayi pashati, syam na pranashami, nat satchami na pranashati. The one who sees me everywhere and sees everything in me, I never lost to him and he has never lost to me. Well, this is gopis. They're bhav. They see everything, Krishna everywhere. So they can't get lost in separation. So the point that's being made here, we have Madhurya Guna, the sweet qualities of Krishna and Aishwarya. In separation, both are there visible. The Madhurya goes down, so that enables the visibility and detection and perception of the Aishwarya, or majestic aspect of Krishna, the godhood of Krishna, the power and omnipotence of Krishna. So this illumination that comes in separation is compared to a sunshine, like illuminating sunshine. So when the sun is shining brilliantly in the sky, then everything is very clearly detectable and perceivable. There's nothing hidden. Sunshine is very brilliant and powerful. Nothing can hide there. It's a very clear form of light, white light, very intense. So this, the Aishwarya Guna of qualities when the gopis are in separation, that separation mood acts like the brilliant illuminating sun. The all-illuminating sun of separation reveals all of Krishna's beautiful transcendental qualities, both the sweet, intimate, confidential qualities, and also the majestic, omnipotent, powerful qualities of Aishwarya. Now, in union with Krishna, and union is a type of mystery. It's a little mysterious. Union is private. Means when you're actually with Krishna, so it's a very secret arrangement. So the union, devotion union, sambhog, is compared to moonbeams. One is sunbeams and one is moonbeams. So moonbeams by nature are not very clear. They're soft, they're not hot. They're not that revealing, somewhat revealing. Moonbeams are considered to be romantic. And romance enhancing. Whereas bright sunshine, no one goes out in that noonday sun and says, oh, I feel so romantic in the sunshine. This sunshine makes me feel so romantic and in a mood of love. No, you want to run inside and get away from the sunshine. It's burning hot and burning your feet. So when gopis are with Krishna, that's more pleasure giving than millions of nectar filled moonbeams. And then that moon only reveals those nectar. Moon gives nectar, samaras, this ras, this amrit flows, or rivers of nectar actually flowing on the moon. And it's covered by this cooling atmosphere, so the rays of the moon emanate. And they go through this cooling atmosphere, so it has a tremendously cooling effect. Like if I have a flashlight, and I have some dry ice, giving off gas, and I shine a flashlight through it. If you put your hand up where you see the light of that flashlight, inside the dry ice, it'll be very cold. If you go to the flashlight and put your hand on the end of the glass, it's very hot. But as that light passes through the cooling atmosphere of the dry ice, then it appears like cooling light. So the moon is covered with jewels and self-luminous Chandrakant. And it gives off these jewels give off this natural radiance, but then this cooling atmosphere, like we have ozone around our planet. They have this layer of ice and cooling atmosphere. So when the rays of light pass through the cooling atmosphere, it gives a very soothing effect. So that's the sampog, is a very soothing and cooling atmosphere. To bask, we say to bask in the sunshine. So this is to revel in the moonshine, to relish and recline in the moonshine of Krishna's intimate darshan association. So at that time, there's no, we can't find in that illumination of the sambhog. It's like moonshine. It's cooling, it's subdued light, it's soft light, subdued light, romantic light. Not very powerful or revealing or illuminating like sunshine. And moreover, sun gives heat and some nourishment, but moon gives amrit, nectar, life itself. So this association intimately with Krishna is not only is soothing and softening and comforting and a little bit mysterious. Night times are mysterious, enchanting times, mysterious times. And everything is not so clear, and so many romantic activities go on in the influence of night and the moonbeams, because these type of intimacies, you don't want to see everything with the beloved. It's like, you know, when lovers get together, they don't turn all the lights on in the bedroom and bring in some floodlights and stuff and focus on the bed or something. Generally there's no lights, or there's some soft moonlight or some night light or no lights, just a love light. The love light of the two lovers, husband and wife, is sufficient. And if some moonshine is coming through the window, all the better. But you can't see the beloved very much in these intimate times, intimate lighting, intimate space. All the features of the beloved, the gunas and qualities, you can't detect so much. At times like that, you're just feeling the sweetness, experiencing the intimacy and sweetness of the moment of the association. That's Krishna and Sambhog. Those confidential times of sweetness and intimacy where you feel the sweetness of Krishna, you perceive the sweetness of Krishna. I don't care to know he's God. It doesn't matter to me. The love is, all I know is the prema I'm experiencing, his prema, my prema. And the sweetness that our premas, as our premas mix, our sambhog premas mix, they produce an incredible sweetness that can only be compared to nectar dripping from the moon and rivers of nectar. So Krishna's association and sambhog and divine union is more pleasure-giving than millions of nectar-filled moonbeams. And these moonbeams, they only reveal those qualities of Krishna which manifest his tasty sweetness. Because the moon supplies the taste of all the vegetables, it says in Gita. So I become the moonbeams and supply the taste in the vegetables. Without moonbeams, the vegetables don't have any taste. So they would rather... they want to experience Krishna's tasty sweetness. Since direct association with Krishna is like the nectar rays of the moon, then intoxicating nectar covers Krishna's opulence. Because when you're intoxicated, you can't perceive very clearly what's going on. Your vision is a little distorted, and your ability to walk is somewhat impaired, and you can't even talk properly. So the whole effect of Krishna's intimate association, because he's manmata manmata madan, he's the churner of the churner of the mind. Manmata manmata madan, aprakrita madan mohan. Krishna is aprakrita, aprakrita madan mohan. He's the transcendental, the enchanter of Cupid. Navina aprakrita, he says, Navina aprakrita madan. He's the new, Navina, new and youthful, transcendental Kamadev, god of love. So the gopis are with that. They're intoxicated by being with that sweet Krishna and that tasting the sweetness of Krishna, which is like an amrit. And they're drinking so much of that amrit of Krishna's sweetness in his direct association, they become intoxicated. Manmata, mata, mada. Manmata means the churn. Mata, mata means churning their minds. Their minds become so churned and captivated and excited, they become totally intoxicated. And when you're intoxicated, you become blind. They become blind to Krishna's Aishwarya. Oh, you're Paramatma. You're God. You're Ram. You're Vamanadeva. All these incarnations. I don't know. You're just my sweet, sweet. You're my sweetie pie. You're my sweet one. You're my dear one. You're my everything. But in a case when even in union or meeting with Krishna, his opulences remain revealed, we must assume that devotee's love is not yet mature. Prema shrinks or becomes less perfect during union or meeting if Krishna's opulence is revealed. Although in this instance the gopis are meeting with Krishna, they are expecting separation, and thus they have a realization of Krishna's Aishwarya caused by their perfectly pure love. This is the mysterious working of prema itself. Even when love is imperfect, it reveals Krishna's glories. And what to speak of when it is completely perfect? Thus, the magnitude of the gopis' experience of Krishna's greatness is a measure of the greatness of their own love. Question is, it appears that the leelas of separation are less than the Madhurya aspect. It's considered, oftentimes they even say that separation is a greater experience than union, but that's not the actual point. The separation is simply to increase the union. They're both equally pleasurable, the leelas in separation and leelas in union. This is how the acharyas, and the separation in one sense is just a feature of union. That's why the Nimbarkis have the concept of Nitya Sambhog. Nitya Nikunj Leela, they call it Nitya Sambhog. There's no Viraha there. Radha and Krishna are in the Kunja 24 hours a day. There's no coward boys, there's no Surya Puja, there's no Yashoda, there's no breakfast, there's this, that. Breakfast in bed. Breakfast in the Kunja. But in our understanding, from rasa aesthetics and also Rupa Goswami's explanation, is that the whole purpose of Krishna's pastimes in Vrindavan is always to be with the gopis. Even though there's other players and other leelas there, they're simply increasing and enhancing his time with the gopis and assisting his union with the gopis. So even the different forms of separation are simply one aspect of a future meeting. So it's not that they have sambhog so that they can experience separation, but this pleasure in separation equals the pleasure in sambhog. The pleasure in separation is to bring them to the pleasure of sambhog. This is how it's generally presented. Because that's why it said, when they're separated, they're having union. When they're having union, they're having separation. So they're really almost not really there's not two different distinct categories. Separation and union are almost going on inconceivably simultaneously. She's with Krishna, she's sitting with Krishna and praying at Pili Pukur in Varsana, or rather, Prem Sarovara. And it's completely sambhog, and she's relishing the sweetness, everything about the sweetness, but then somehow in that intimate relish of sambhog and all the madhurya sweetness of Krishna, then some circumstance happens where a bumblebee gets chased away. And bumblebee is called Madhusudan. And the gopi said, oh, we chased Madhusudan far away. He won't come back anymore. Radharani hears, oh, Madhusudan has been chased away. And then she becomes bewildered and starts crying, oh, my Lord. And then she's sitting on Krishna's lap. She can't even see him. So there's a case of the blindness. She's blind. She's blind because of the sweetness, not because of the separation. Yeah, but she's blind. The sweetness is so great. And union, she becomes blind, blinded by the sweetness, and forgets he's even there. And then she feels separation, crying. And then Krishna sees that. And then he cries, and they again become united. Because, you know, everyone starts crying. All the gopis and all the birds and animals are crying because they're crying. And they're all chanting, oh, Shama Radha. Then they come to conscious and they look at each other and say, oh, you're crying in my separation. Now I'm crying in your separation. Oh, let's have union. So then that crying and separation increases the taste of union even more. It's like the sun coming out after the rainfall. The earth feels so joyful. So the rain is falling, and then the sun, bright sun, comes out from behind the clouds, 3 or 4 days cloud, and the rays of the sun dance on the earth, on the surface of Mother Earth, and she feels so happy in the warm rays and so much pleasure. So after the rain of separation, then the meeting of the lovers is even more intense. So they're equal experiences of pleasure and love. And one is, they're just like one aspect of the prema. Like two sides of one coin, they say. They're not like, okay, there's four. Like when you see it listed in books and stuff, they say, there's four kinds of love and separation, Viraha Bhav. And there's, Sneha, Man, Pranaya. No, I mean, was it Man, Premvaichitya? And Purvarag, there's Purvarag Man, Premvaichitya, then Pravasarag or Durvas or Pradurbhav, means at a distance. Krishna's gone to a long place, to Mathura, or intense separation, he's gone very far away. Durvas, living in a faraway place. Then it talks about four kinds of union, even eight kinds, it even talks about eight types of. It says Sankshipta Sambhog and Samridhiman, Samridhiman Sambhog, Sankshipta, and I forget. One of Sankshipta means a very brief meeting. It's like a quickie, they say. You just meet for a few minutes and, you know, Krishna kisses Radharani's neck or something, they run away, whatever. Then Samridhiman, like Samridhi, Ridhi means wealth, Ridhi city, Ridhi means complete wealth. So Samridhi Sambhog means very enriching, long meeting for a long time and very enriching exchange, very satisfying, enriching exchange of love, loving intimacy, prem dalliance. It's called Samridhiman. It's filled, it's being together for a long time with full satisfaction. So these are different types of separations, different types of unions, but it's all the sweetness of prema. Our idea of love is so much more dynamic. So many more feelings come into play, and so many varieties, some more varieties, more feelings, more exchanges, more variety. As Prabhupada often said, variety is the mother of enjoyment.